Sunset Lake CBD is a majority employee-owned hemp farm located right outside of Burlington, Vermont. Before they started growing hemp, Sunset Lake Farms produced cream for Ben & Jerry's. Sunset Lake CBD doesn't use any pesticides or herbicides to grow any of its hemp plants, and they use organic fertilizer and other sustainable farming techniques to ensure the long-term health of the soil and to minimize their carbon footprint. So like all of us, my days are really stressful. By the end of the night, my kids are in bed, I'm taking a minute to chill, but I'm still unwinding. I recently started using the Relax Gummies infused with CBD isolate, reishi mushroom extract, and ashwagandha root extract. I'm really glad I tried these because they really helped me get ready for a good night of sleep, and I really think I sleep better, so I'd highly recommend it. Check out Sunset Lake CBD today at sunsetlakecbd.com and use the code UNDERMINE for 20% off your order. That's sunsetlakecbd.com and use the code UNDERMINE for 20% off your order. Farmer-owned, Vermont-grown, Sunset Lake CBD. Hey listeners, I want to tell you about Music Masters Collective, a nonprofit organization that produces unique music events, providing opportunities for fans and artists to meet and collaborate in an inspired and creative atmosphere. These events give you the opportunity to learn from world-class musicians like the Fab Four, Steve Earle, Richard Thompson, John Scofield, Nels Klein, the Milk Carton Kids, and many more. This June, join the Wait Band, featuring members of the band and the Levon Helm Band with special guests, including Jimmy Vivino, Bob Margolin, Lost Leaders, Chris O'Leary, Cindy Cashdollar, Stony Creek Band, Rob Fraboni, Larry Packer, and so many more at Camp Cripple Creek. This all-inclusive music vacation in the Catskill Mountains of upstate New York promises to be a once-in-a-lifetime experience featuring performances, workshops, jams, comfortable lodging, and superb dining. Visit campcripplecreek.com/undermine to register today. That's campcripplecreek.com/undermine.
Osiris.
Hello and welcome to season 4, episode 32 of the Undermine podcast by Osiris Media. I'm Tom Marshall, and I will be your host as we revisit, relive, re-listen, and maybe even redefine Phish's fabled Fall 97 tour. That's the now legendary tour where, according to the band's marketing materials at the time, their hands were faster than guns. And with those hands, they destroyed America. And or more than one GPA, as Phish's audience appeared to be heavily collegiate at the time. They grow up so fast, don't they, Benji?
They do.
In a stunning coincidence, one of the Phish fans who missed college classes and deadlines to attend some of these Fall 97 shows is today's co-host, New York Times bestselling author Benji Eisen. Hi, Benji.
Hi, Tom. That's all true. All of the above. Today, we are actually back at the Hampton Coliseum for the second night in a row, which means maybe you went to the Holiday Inn afterwards and did the Hooters or whatever it was you did for your after show. You know, this was Phish's first two-night stand at the venue. And for many, myself included, that meant the first time that we were at Hampton at all. You know, because it's a long drive from Phish's density centers in the Northeast, right? And it's just far enough from the band's southern fan belt to make it a little bit too inconvenient to travel to for just one night. But you make a weekend out of it, and then you have a total Phish tour takeover of like the surrounding areas. We kind of descend all around the venue. Everything's in walking distance. You know, so we will definitely be discussing some of that type of fairy dust and, of course, the 11/22/97 show itself today, 25 years later to the day.
Nice.
But first, to quote myself from yesterday, to quote Elvis Presley, who performed 5 sold-out shows at the Hampton Coliseum, let us TCB, which means taking care of business. So here it goes. seatbelts on. If you're enjoying what we're doing on the show, then please consider supporting our new Osiris Premium offering, which you can join for just a few bucks a month. You will get bonus episodes of HF Pod and Undermine, ad-free episodes, access to the full archival Under the Scales catalog, discounts on Osiris merch, meet and greets, AMAs, the opportunity to guest on our shows. How do you think I'm here? check out osirispod.com/premium or just click on the link in the show notes. One more thing, like Jonathan Fishman actually says at the end of The Godfather, one more thing. Is that true? All of us have so many great memories of these fall 97 shows. You know, many of my friends reached out to me to kind of just relive some of these moments. And many of you have reached out to all of us wanting to share. And we want you to. So here's how you can do that and what might be in it for you. So first, take a video of you talking about any of these shows, maybe a favorite memory, maybe a favorite jam, whatever you want to share in 1 minute or less. Post it on Instagram, Twitter, or Facebook. If you tag Osiris Pod, and you have to tag Osiris Pod, well, then we will choose a contributor at random who will win, drumroll please, a handwritten copy of The Lyrics to Ghost from our friend Tom Marshall. And just so you guys know, I already told him that no, he isn't allowed to use disappearing ink. Fool me once, Tom.
Well, you'd also, as you guys might guess, you'd violated the 1 minute length clause on your entry.
Yes, that's very true. So, you know, these announcements were fun and over the 1 minute mark. So now let's get to the real work. Let's take a trip back to 11/22/97, Hampton Coliseum.
I literally thought you'd never ask, Benji. Our guest today gives us the skinny every time Fish performs, and he's provided many of us with Friday afternoon water cooler talk on Twitter via his weekly hashtag YemBlog Convo threads. And you know him as the editor at Jambase, and we know him as a longtime friend of the pod, Scott Bernstein. Let's see if he appears from the waiting room. There he is.
Hello.
Hey, Scott, and welcome, and thanks for coming.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be on the podcast.
Absolutely. We wouldn't have it any other way. before talking about the show, might as well step back and look at the venue itself, right? Because we talked a little bit about it yesterday, as our guest Craig Hilwig mentioned, that by the mid-90s, when Fish started playing the room, it had already attained legendary status because of the Grateful Dead. Was this your first time at the Mothership? And what made you want to head on down for this weekend?
This was my first time, and I don't come from the Grateful Dead school. I got into Fish before I got into the music of the Grateful Dead. So Hampton didn't really stick out to me. And it was only a couple of weeks before the show when a group of friends that I had recently met and become friendly with just kept on telling me about how special of a room Hampton Coliseum was, and that I couldn't really call myself a real Fish fan unless I made it down to the Hampton Coliseum. And they talked me into it, and I didn't really know what I was getting into. And I took a trip with about 14 other Skidmore students. We all fit piled into this huge 1986 conversion van named George. And it was an adventure from the first minute through the last minute, through arriving back in the snow on Sunday morning after the show. And it really lived up to all of the hype and the expectations that my friends had told me about. My favorite part is that it's a general admission arena. There aren't many of those. And the fact that we could all sit together and we were all in the same space and dancing together and grooving together was just something I hadn't really experienced before in an arena at an indoor show.
Except on your ride down.
Yes. Yeah. Exactly.
Scotty, and the other thing too, I mean, now there's GA floors, but at the time the floors were not GA. It was very rare. So that was a big selling point to me. And like yourself, you know, I didn't know about the venue before this week. I mean, I knew about it before this weekend, but I didn't know the magic of it, or I didn't hold the appeal until I got there. You know, Tom just referred to it in the same way that we all have come to refer to it, which is the mothership, you know, and indeed, as soon as someone says that, we know what they're talking about. It wasn't always that way. You know, Phish played Hampton for one night on the previous two fall tours, 95 and 96. The November 25th, 1995 debut there is worth a listen, as it deservedly bleeds into, of course, one of the most revered Phish months of all time, which is December 95. And it contained an instrument rotation jam, a half-speed Poor Heart. Then the 96 show, another one-off around, you know, the late fall, it wasn't particularly memorable. Then along comes fall 97, and I feel like for Phish fans, it just put Hampton on the map, you know, on the Phish map. Is this, in your mind, is this kind of the weekend when Hampton became the mothership?
Without a doubt. I mean, anyone, I remember the vibe of leaving both shows, and it just increased after each night. And just as we're on our way back, just having our asses had just proverbially handed to us, we were talking about how it was among, at the time, the best shows I had ever seen. And it still remains that way 25 years later. They did it again the following year. There was another very special run in 98, which Tom played a big role in. And 99 had its moments. And of course, Phish come twice picked Hampton for their comeback, along with Madison Square Garden 2002-2003, and then for the three-night run in 2009. But I left really realizing what an amazing place it was, and that it truly was the mothership after that two-night run.
Well, you mentioned 98, and definitely, you know, it's probably my favorite for that reason. I also was never really that big a tape trader. And so when a show gets an official release treatment, and at the time became CDs, that's when I would like take notice often, unless someone, you know, had insisted that I listen to a show, and, you know, that would happen too for certain shows. But the 98 one became the Hampton Comes Alive, of course. And it was the first release to contain the complete performance. And it contained both of them, actually. And that was released in 1999. Then they released the 97 run after that, bundled with Tomorrow's Show from Winston-Salem. So two Hamptons and a Winston-Salem in a box set in 2011. Where do you place Fall 97 in these Hampton appearances?
For me, it's the top. And I mean, I love bust outs. I love gags. I love fun covers. But the improvisation is number one. And there's so many incredible jams everywhere you look in the 97 run that puts it at the top for me.
Well, you know, Scotty, talking of that, at what point during this show, and this is a question, by the way, that I could literally only ask you, nobody else. At what point during this show does a desk suddenly deserve to be flipped over in appreciation?
I will tell you the first and probably most significant occurrence would be towards the end of Weekapaw. Phish just cuts out. And this was a really cool thing that they did a number of times in 97 and 98, where they just stopped. And then Trey comes back in with this roaring solo and builds this huge peak, and the desk would have been flying as Trey is just letting it rip towards the end of Weekapaw.
Ladies and gentlemen, it should be known that our guest today, Scotty B, holds the patent and the trademark for desk flipping. That whole meme he invented. And don't tell me otherwise if it's not true, what I just said. set one, right? Opens with Mike's song, closes with Isabella, but there's a whole dance party in between. Can you walk us through it a little bit, Scott?
It was like a dream sequence. I mean, they hadn't opened with Mike's on U.S. soil since 1990. I mean, I couldn't believe my ears when that riff came out of Trey's guitar. And what a Mike's it was. You know, so much funk within, and Black Eyed Katie teases would foreshadow what was to come. And Mike's just kind of fades into I Am Hydrogen in a way that not many have. I mean, there wasn't the typical cascade of notes or the composed section. And Trey really put his whammy pedal to good use during that I Am Hydrogen. It's really underrated part of the show. I told you about the Weekapa, and there was a huge funk jam. You'll hear that repeated a lot as we go through this. And then the start stop that led into the peak. I also highly recommend listening to Paige's work on Clav as the Weekapa gets heated up. That's a really great moment there. And then the fish, you know, after this incredible, mind-blowing start, comes Harry Hood. And again, this is a second set. I mean, this set list could be any, this first set list could be any second set. And you'd right. be so surprised to find out it was a first set. And everything was really well played. Harry's had a beautiful peak as usual. And then Fish took a breather with Train Song and Billy Breathes. Both were played really well. And I certainly, after dancing my butt off for so long, appreciated the break. And then a interesting pairing of covers to end the set with Frankenstein and Isabella. And it was my first Isabella. And I thought the roof was going to come off towards the end as Trey is just shredding. I mean, and every song just seemed to be played with extra mustard, which was a trend that we saw pretty much all fall, and especially the night before.
I like that you say extra mustard, one, because that's a fun phrase, but also just because it is true. You know, we've talked before getting to Fall 97, we've talked about these 25 shows leading up to it. And one thing that they all have in common, there's sometimes when you know within the first 30 seconds of a show that you're in for it, just it's hard to define, but extra mustard. You know, they come out and Trey just has it, and they're all synced up. And it starts off like that. And I agree. I do think this first set was like that. The Harry Hood, I hate to say Harry Hood's underrated, but I think this could be underrated and is rated pretty high to begin with. Scotty, I love talking Fish with you. Before we can get to set two, we're going to take a quick set break. So we'll be right back after these commercial messages.
Hey listeners, I want to tell you about one of our great partners, DistroKid. DistroKid makes music distribution fun and easy with unlimited uploads and artists keeping 100% of their royalties and earnings. If you're a musician and looking to get your music out there, DistroKid is the way to go. DistroKid is available for iOS and Android and is now available in Apple's App Store and the Google Play Store. More than a million artists rely on DistroKid to get their music onto Spotify, Apple Music, YouTube, TikTok, Tidal, Instagram, and all other major streaming services. And with DistroKid, you can upload new releases, see your financial progress, get notified when you've earned royalties, withdraw money from the app, view and share links, check your streaming stats, and a whole lot more. DistroKid has more features than any other music distributor. Check them out today. Go to distrokid.com, that's DistroKid with a capital K.com/VIP/undermine for a special offer only for our listeners. That's DistroKid, capital K, .com/VIP/undermine. Thanks, DistroKid.
Ready for a head-bangingly good time? Dive into the world of heavy metal with the Brutally Delicious podcast. Here, we don't just talk music. we welcome you into our heavy metal family. Join us for candid chats with legends and rising stars. We go beyond the typical interviews, exploring raw emotions and the life-altering impact of heavy metal. So whether you're a diehard metalhead or just curious, join our family and let the headbanging begin with the Brutally Delicious Podcast.
Please take your seats. Intermission is over. I'm here with my co-host Benji Eisen and our guest Scott Bernstein as we're discussing Hampton, November 22, 97. But you already know all of that. So if you don't mind, we're going to ask Scotty some more questions. Scott, set two opens with a Halley's Comet, and we always want it to jam. It seldom does, but when it doesn't disappoint. And here they jam it for 24 minutes, which made it the world's longest Halley's at the time. And to this day, it's only beat by one version, a 28-minute version in Portland, Maine. What's going on here that the song lasts for so long?
I mean, first of all, we've got to mention that the fans started at set break, or right after the intermission, started chanting the lyrics to Destiny Unbound in an attempt to get Phish to bust out this song that they hadn't played since 1991. And it epically failed. Trey had some great banter where he's like, what are you, is this a cannibalistic chant? What are you guys saying? And I think that played a part in the magical Halley's that came out. And it's one of my favorite Phish jams of all time. It's a masterclass in improvisation. Trey tells Mike to stay on F as the jam gets started. And it's similar to what I was talking about with how Mike's went into Hydrogen, in that they skip the whole structured part of the transition and just start vamping on this beautiful groove. And it's feels like there's like they went in a dozen different directions over the course of those 24 minutes, and all filled with hose. And you know, Phish a few years earlier was all about the speed and precision, and this was a more minimalist affair. Phish didn't change the beat that he was playing for pretty much the whole first half of the jam, which made it really impactful when he did pick it up just a little bit and his bandmates followed along. You know, Mike, Trey, and Paige, really, every time they'd zig, the other ones would zag. And it was really one of the greatest improvisations in Phish history. And one of my favorite sections is around the 19-minute mark, when it seems like Halley's has faded out and is just over. And there's this ambient jamming that starts that's so delicate and beautiful. And there's still like 5 or 6 more minutes of this that we get before Halley's ended. And it really is, again, one of my all-time favorite Phish jams, and I can't say enough about how special it was. And I love listening back to it and do it on the anniversary every year.
And, you know, that's awesome. And also what I think is so, one of the many things about this jam that's so great is as soon as it ends, of course, it goes right into Tweezer. And anytime, you know, Tweezer starts up, it doesn't matter where it is in the set. It's like, you know, sometimes if they stack it after a jam like this, you're kind of like, you guys are killing me. But so we have to talk about this Tweezer. Otherwise, I'm sure that the Fall 97 police will arrest us all. So, Scotty, pretend that nobody listening has heard this Tweezer the dozen plus times that I'm sure they have. Walk us through it a little bit.
You know, Trey's rhythmic work is so underrated. He gets all the accolades for his soloing and his lead work, but on this Tweezer, the four of them get locked into this groove where he plays this rhythmic pattern over and over again. This is not your typical Tweezer. There's no crazy peak. It's just a majestic groove for nearly 10 minutes that they're all locked into. And it really is so signature Fall 97.
I love that term. And Trey, you know, I think we brought this up a few times. Trey doesn't love the term cow funk, and he would prefer us to say a groove. And this song in particular is the groove. You called it a majestic groove. And then which goes nicely into Black Eyed Katie, the third one ever. Had you heard it before this night, or was it new?
This was completely new for me, and I hadn't even heard a recording of it. So I certainly had a feeling of what it was from the descriptions that I had heard. And it was, you know, Fall 97 encapsulated in a song, which is pretty damn cool in itself. And what surprised me is the crazy, impactful peak that they hit out of that they built Black Eyed Katie into. I certainly didn't know that part existed. And whereas, you know, we talked about how Tweezer and Haley's and Mike's weren't about the peaks, they were more about the majestic grooves. This was certainly all about the peak for Black Eyed Katie.
You know, we love to talk about how Fall 97 was the year of the, I was going to say the year of the cow funk, but we'll say the year of the groove, right?
Yes.
So that description, though, of cow funk, despite Trey's feelings about it, the description alone, cow funk, is about as famous as the Ben & Jerry's ice cream flavor that was created using milk from those cow funk cows. So you place it in a time capsule and you open it 25 years later to the day. Does this show do the Fall 97 tour justice when you take it by itself? You know, in other words, you said a moment ago that Black Eyed Katie was kind of, the encapsulated, and I agree with you 100%. What about this show? Can you say that this show is indicative of the tour?
Without a doubt. It's one of the highlights of the tour. It kept the trend of the cowpunk/majestic grooves going throughout. It solidified, as we said, Hampton as a peak fish venue, and was it encapsulated so much of what made Fall 97 so special throughout every part of the night.
That's cool. That's really cool. So this is one of those runs, you know, a two-night run where you walk out of the venue after the first night, high-fiving your pals and wondering if there's any way they could top it. And it feels kind of like the second night might have. And what do you think about that?
I used to lean towards night one, probably because it was the night I popped my Fish Hampton cherry. But as the years have gone on and I've fallen in love more with the Haley's, and just as I said, the extra mustard that's in every song they played on that second night, it makes it stand out just that much. But the beauty of it is we got both nights. We got to enjoy both nights. And I'm glad I don't have a gun to my head as I'm choosing between these right. two, because it's a tough choice. There's something to be said for each of them.
As I think we did with your other jam bass pal who came on, I asked a current question. I'm wondering, as editor of Jam Bass, what bands you're seeing come across your table? What's the interesting water cooler talk at Jam Bass these days?
And I'm sure Andy probably answered with the same thing, but it's King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizard. I mean, any band that can put out three albums that are so different and each monumental in their own way in the same month is just something to behold. And I haven't had a chance to see them live yet, but everyone who has just raves about them. And that is the talk for sure of Jam Bass right now.
I wanted to see if you guys were consistent, and there was no preparation for that question, I can attest to. And you both answered it exactly the same way, which is awesome. So two shout outs on these episodes to King Gizzard. So
Scotty, which for people breaking their King Giz cherry, which album, because they have 5,253 albums, which albums, and their albums are very different too, which I like about them, but which one would you recommend that people get their feet wet with?
The changes that just came out is incredible and shows where they're at right now, and I think is a fine place to start.
Thank you so much. We went a little current actually I think this show has now gone on for longer than the longest Halley's Comet, so it's probably going to do it for us today. Thank you, Scotty B, and my co-host Benji Eisen, and also to RJB, another B, because you never know, he might be listening. Hi, RJ. Thanks to all of you listening, and to the Osiris team, especially Eric Limarenko and Matt Dwyer, for making all of this work from behind the scenes. And before you start streaming November 23rd in preparation for tomorrow, let me give a quick shout out to the Cash or Trade guys and women, the world's only social network where fans buy, sell, and trade tickets at face value. If you need tickets for something you want to go to, or have tickets for something you can't, then go right now to cashortrade.org. Please remember to review and subscribe wherever you listen and watch. And whatever you do, take care of yourself and blaze on. And thanks again, Scott. And thank you, Benji.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks for having me.
Osiris.
Ready for a head-bangingly good time? Dive into the world of heavy metal with the Brutally Delicious podcast. Here, we don't just talk music. We welcome you into our heavy metal family. Join us for candid chats with legends and rising stars. We go beyond the typical interviews, exploring raw emotions and the life-altering impact of heavy metal. So whether you're a diehard metalhead or just curious, join our family and let the headbanging begin with the Brutally Delicious podcast.
Yes, we're out there, everyone. I'm Hal Schwartz.
And I'm Flynn McClain. Together, we host None But the Brave, a podcast dedicated to the music and career of Bruce Springsteen.
Bruce and E Street Band are on tour right now for the first time in 6 years, and we're taking a detailed look at what's happening on stage in our bi-weekly episodes.
We've also been recently joined by some very exciting guests, including rock journalist Warren Zanes and Stephen Hyden, Backstreet's Magazine founder Charles Cross, and Barstool's Kirk Menahan.
If you're a diehard Springsteen fan, this is the show for you.
So please subscribe to None But the Brave on your favorite podcasting platform, and we hope to see you further on up the road.
Thank you so much! We'll be seeing you!